Sahana bhavatu, sahana bhunaktu, sahaveyankara bhavahai, tejasvinavaditamastu mavidvishabahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om jaya shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri advaita gadadhara shri vasadi gaura bhakta vrinda hare krishna 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 hare 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 rama 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 hare hare.
Okay. Alright, so we went through the summary of the Rupa Goswami's instructions. Then we went through that the condition of if there are limitations for anybody to become a Vaishnava. I think this is where we ended. Any questions on any of these? You have?
On the limitation.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of merging the Brahman is with the
Well, yes. Merging the Brahman, also previously we discussed more like a broad picture, is being attached to the material concepts of life. Because even the liberation, the attachment to actually, you know, be detached from material sense gratification, it's still material concept, and therefore in its own way it's still attachment. So that still keeps us here. So we have to be attached to, spiritual. We have to be attached to Krishna to be able to fully detach ourselves from the material concepts. So yes, that's the limitation. So what is important for a Vaishnava to observe? Srila Rupa Goswami warns that if a person is properly initiated by a bona fide spiritual master, he should not think that simply by the acceptance of such initiation, his business is then finished. One still has to follow the rules and regulations very carefully. If after accepting the spiritual master and being initiated, one does not follow the rules and regulations of devotional service, then he is again fallen. One must be very vigilant to remember that he is the part and parcel of the transcendental body of Krishna, and that it is duty as a part and parcel to give service to the whole or Krishna. If we do not render service to Krishna, then again we fall down. In other words, simply becoming initiated does not elevate one to the position of a high-class brahmana. One also has to discharge the duties and follow the regulative principles very rigidly. So that's the process of when after sadhu sangha, then we are ready to take initiation. But initiation on its own, it's not the solution. Again, it's the process. It's just one step. So we use that as the means to perform our devotional service more seriously. So therefore, spiritual master, he gives us certain regulations. So then we will be able not to forget Krishna. And he gives us a process how we can always remember Krishna. So that has to be understood. And just getting it, that does not elevate us or in any way doesn't give us any result. Following the instructions, it will. So it is a process, and the initiation is in the process. It's part of the process. And that, while following this, then we can advance in the spiritual life. Therefore, it should not be, no, we should not think, or this is, we should not like set a goal. Yes, I want to get initiated by that spiritual master. Now, once I get, okay, so now I'm safe. Now I'm away from, I'm connected to the parampara, so then I don't have to do anything, and now I'm free of all the miseries, and everything will be now perfectly taken care of. No. This, the beginning, this is actually the beginning of another, more serious step in our devotional service. So now we get the opportunity. We get the opportunity to render service, and if we do so, then we will get more taste. We will get more, actually, attraction for the Lord, for the service. But we have to be very serious. That's the meaning of actually the initiation. That now we decide, okay, from now on, I want to be serious. So no more playing around. Just we want to really seriously get into the business of devotional service. So for that, then the instructions are going to be given by the spiritual master. And those have to be very strictly followed. We should not think, oh, now I'm initiated, so I must be automatically, I don't have to follow any instructions. Wrong. No, on contrary, actually, by that initiation, we bound ourselves. We give a promise. We give a vow. So by that vow, then we are obliged not to follow the instructions as they are given. By following these instructions, yes, we get purified. So then we go through the stage of anartha nivritti, and then once most of the anarthas are gone, then we start to actually get more steady, more fixed. So that way, then from that point, then devotional service is much faster, because the detachment from the material world is much easier as we get rid of our anarthas. But until we reach to the platform of bhava and prema, then it is not possible to give up the regulative principles, and we must follow the instructions as they are given. Because until that point, we don't know, we still don't know what is right, what is wrong. Now, on the platform of prema, then we naturally follow our heart. So whatever Krishna wants us to do, we are ready to do it through our heart. So then naturally there is the point of following regulative principles may not be there, because it's a different realm. But if we try to speed it up, and that we try to find out what is our position, or how and practice it, even though we are not qualified for it yet, then that's sahaj. It's like a pretending, or make it easy. Sahaj means actually easy. So, but it's not easy. It's easy at the moment when we fully surrender to the Lord. Then it's easy. But the process of fully surrendering to the Lord may not be easy, depending on the individuals.
So sahaj will be easy without surrendering.
Sahaj means that you start doing things that the symptoms. You see Krishna, start crying. But actually it's not really coming from the heart, but only you know, because no ecstasy, no, one starts to develop the ecstatic symptoms without actually not coming. So by that, then they expect that they will at one point get the true ecstatic symptoms. And Rupa Goswami, he explained that there may be something, you know, from it, but it will be more like on the level of Agyata Sukriti. It won't be true devotional service. So even though they may get eventually, you know, to the, you know, higher level of devotional service and eventually actually take Sarana Bhakti, but it will take long time through the process. Though the devotee who takes Sarana Bhakti and then he practices, so then after the level of Raganuga, Sarana Bhakti, then the ecstatic symptoms appear. So he doesn't need to pretend anything, it's just comes very naturally. So like when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu entered Jagannath Puri, so then he was in ecstasy, then he fell down and he lost his consciousness. But no, when the devotees actually came and they were not sure, kind of like if he's pretending or not, because there were many sahajiyas doing very similar things. So that's the difficulty. So we may see many times it may not be really for us possible to distinguish who is actually truly showing actual ecstatic symptoms and somebody who is just pretending. So if we are not sure, then better just respect from distance and
then,
yes, but we should not try ourselves kind of like how it will be, because it's not a recommended process and it doesn't work. Yes. Yes. And even the Goswamis, they were always meditating, they were always in ecstasy, but externally, they were just like ordinary devotees, without the symptoms. So there is no need to actually show others how elevated I am. There is no need for that. Yes, for the advanced devotees, the symptoms are not the proof. It's not how the externals. Again, there are the externals. What's important is the internal.
That's the lesson to be learned from the internal is really important.
Yes.
Which is your real connection to the Lord.
So for that, then there must be some, the inner feelings, something will reveal either the person is really for real elevated or not. When Narada Muni was a small boy and serving the Mahabhagavatas, so then he didn't hesitate even for a moment, and he took every opportunity to associate with them, take their prasad and discuss Krishna Katha. So and he got full benefit from that. So that's the important thing. We just have to know and see kind of like who is who and what part are we taking in it. Yes?
Well, I've heard from several devotees that when one is taking initiation, then it's important that one should be able to have a lot of, or not a lot, but a substantial amount of personal association with the guru on all the time, not that 99% of the time, then the guru is somewhere else, and then the guru cannot see what the disciple is doing and cannot instruct him accordingly to the situation he's in. So, can you please explain?
You see, because for the conditioned living being, right? So, very important due to the conditioning is that the nature, our nature, and the nature of our future guru, then would be very similar. So we understand each other. No, not from the point of liberated, because on the liberated platform, no, you don't have problem with anybody. But through your conditioning, no, the guru should be able to explain things the way you understand, the way, no, you actually prefer do things, because it's your conditioning. So if we can engage you in your conditioning, then you will be more easy to be surrender. You will surrender easier, no, in these conditions. So once you surrender and you purify your heart, then after it, it doesn't really matter, because you can do anything. But until then, yes, it will be, you know, a bit more difficult. So and at that time, the vapu, or the association actually, you know, with the body, it's important. But that's not the most important thing in the relationship of guru and disciple. The vani, or the instruction, that's the most important. But depends on the disciple. Somebody may need more of the vapu association, somebody no less. But it's in the beginning where it is quite important. But if some doesn't require, so no, and immediately can take advantage of the vani or the instructions, then it's also alright. Because the instruction is the most important element. But how the instruction is given? Now, if the disciple needs some other, like some emotions or some way how to give the instruction, not being personal or being by letter, no, so that should be taken into consideration. So that's the conditioning of the disciple. But once the conditioning goes away, so the disciple understands that the important part is the vani. So the vani can be found anywhere. In the speech, in the books, doesn't have to be the personal association there. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so depends very much on the level of conditioning and the way of conditioning, you know, of the disciple, what his requirement is. So then he should very carefully choose whom he can accept as his guru, because he will have to accept the instructions. To accept the instruction, there must be some way of, like, the chemistry works, right? So dynamics are not good. But that's only on the level until the disciple is still on the conditioned level. After that, it doesn't really matter. So that's a consideration for the beginning of the process. But it's there, it's important. Yeah? Yes.
So, on this point of accepting initiation, what is the position and the defects of a person who is discharging the duties and following instructions of, for example, Prabhupada, but didn't take initiation from any living guru?
You see, when we are conditioned, then it's actually important for the guru to be able to see that the disciple actually does follow properly. So there is a feedback. Based on that, then the guru gives instructions. Like you have... what's his name? That in Mahabharata, the archer?
Ekalavya.
Ekalavya, right. Ekalavya, no, he accepts Drona as his guru, makes his statue and then practices in front of him. But it's one way only. But accepting guru, it's two ways. It's a relationship. So it is difficult to accept somebody whom, by reading, say, Prabhupada's books, and yes, we are accepting Prabhupada's instruction because he is our acharya. But there must be somebody who will explain to us and see that we are following them properly. Because we, in our mind and our conditioning, may think that we are following everything as it's supposed to be. But who is going to correct us? If we are not on the pure state that actually Prabhupada appears in our heart and he guides us, then it will be very difficult. So therefore, his disciples, who understood the teachings of Srila Prabhupada, may explain to us. So it's a feedback. Now, once we understand the principles, so based on the principles, we can build the whole process, and we would follow the process in the mood of Srila Prabhupada, but we may develop different aspects. But how and what we do, the mood stays. So, for example, like Srila Prabhupada very clearly preaches that our movement is a preaching movement. So we are not much into just sit and do only bhajan. Not the bhajanandi. So we rather go out and preach, which means that we don't have much time for the bhajan. But for us, the preaching is the bhajan, which some of the sampradayas will not understand and will not accept as bona fide. But ultimately, who cares? It's very important to follow the instructions. So, Srila Prabhupada is our acharya. That's his mood. So in the same mood, we follow. Now, the way how we preach, that we may go by bus and make some Sankirtan party, or we may just go alone and preach somewhere, or do Harinam locally. That's another way of preaching, by distributing books, or preaching by worshipping the deity, or preaching by Harinam. The aspects may be different, but there are details. But the principle stays. So the principles are very important to maintain the flavor, the mood. Yes.
Is there any authentic rules about the sampradaya outside of the school, or everything is
believed? If there are some bona fide gurus, yes, yes, there are. There are the four main sampradayas, and then yes, they are. Means all the Gaudiya maths. So then they are coming from the line of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So they are bona fide gurus, but their flavor is different than ours. You see, Srila Prabhupada very clearly wanted to spread the holy name in every town and village. So for that he united everybody, and in that mood and we in ISKCON very clearly cooperate with each other. But the Gaudiya Math, because it's a math, so then first of all, then no woman allowed in the math. So it's only for the brahmacharis. If somebody wants to get married, then they must leave. Then within the math there is one Swamiji, and he rules the math. Now, if there is any other Swamiji going to be, then he will go and he will make his own mat. So then the mat will grow. But they don't have really way how to coordinate everything together and cooperate with each other. Even the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati wanted that, but still they somehow cannot find the way how to do that. So they print their own books, they maintain their own property, and they are doing their own preaching. But because of that, so it's very much broken up. So then the potency will not be so great. And many times they don't really even help each other. Or no, they do things differently and like that. So that's why, no, in ISKCON, then Srila Prabhupada established the GBC, that's the, no, governing body committee. And under that everything happens. So the unity stays. And because of the unity, so even though we have many temples, but the temples are under the, no, one governing body. So based on that, there is the unity, and therefore the preaching and the mood, no, should remain the same. That's the idea. That's what Prabhupada wanted to establish. So the, because of the unity, then the power will be more, the influence will be more. But we cannot say that no other gurus are not bona fide. They are no coming from the bona fide sampradaya, so therefore they are bona fide. I don't know. I didn't hear that. Same like no, within our no, some guru is expert in no some area, some in other, but together no, everything gets worked out. No, over there also some guru maybe no expert in one aspect, and then in other aspect some other guru maybe there. So the disciples will be drawn to no, if they want to develop that aspect, so they will be drawn to one guru, somebody else drawn to other guru. And no, even in Prabhupada, no, in the Lilamrita, it's explained like when before going to America the second time, so then he visited no, a few of the Gaudiya Mats. So and then one Gaudiya Mat, they were very much into studying the Shastra, but not much into preaching. No, but they were studying, they were very, no, scholarly and everything. The other Gaudiya Mat, they were not much into studying, but they were going for preaching, Harinams and not doing those aspects. So each of them were doing well, but each of them had different, little different idea how to do, and they were not working together. So Srila Prabhupada commented on that, that ideal is if they would go work together, so then the aspect of the studying can be applied also on the preaching. So that was the ideal. But because of the structure, then among them it was not possible. So Srila Prabhupada now wanted to establish in the ISKCON. So that's the only difference. Now, we cannot say that they are not, no, knowledgeable, or they are no, not great devotees. They are, but just the aspect how no, the management works, then it is not ideal. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Can I ask you one question?
Yeah. Okay. Oh. I don't know if we should get into details, but okay.
Another thing is that okay, this person he came to the temple, came, but then he went to Gaudiya Mat and took initiation there. It's like sounds like he fell.
Well, you see, it's not a question of if he not goes and goes to Gaudiya Mat. That's not the point. Point is once one accepts a guru, so then he should not, no, change his guru unless there is really a reason for it. Because by accepting a guru, one gets connected to the parampara, and through that he establishes the relationship with Krishna. Now, changing guru, just thinking that oh, he is not good now, or I'll take this one, he looks better. So, Srila Rupa Goswami, he describes it as a prostitution. And for such devotees, then it's very difficult to be chased to Krishna, and Krishna doesn't want to really be too close to those devotees. So this is the problem. So the problem in the mentality of how we get something from our spiritual master, and that's something that he actually gives us the chance to become a devotee, should be enough to be grateful for the rest of our lives. So even though something happens, he may fall down, there is no really need for any initiation, because we are connected already to the parampara. So an important the aspect in the devotional service is shiksha. So there are so many of his god brothers, so many other devotees, so which we can take the shiksha from. So there is no need. But if because of our mind and not the need for it, so it's possible. It can be done. But it can be done only if there is a reason for it. That means actually that either the guru may pass away, or the guru fall down, or something, not just because of our whimsical thinking that, I don't think that he is good anymore. So this, the Shastra does not give any possibility of doing so. So we have to be very careful that we don't try to take advantage of just because some other guru may say some other the same thing more sweet, or that he may appear more knowledgeable, and therefore we should change. That's actually aparat. Now there was in the Shastra, it's like a story to illustrate. One disciple, he was studying in under one guru, and then he was studying well, he was a good disciple. But at one point he came to know about some other guru, and he saw that the other guru, then he knows more than his guru. So then he just went to this second guru, and he said, my Guruji, please accept me as a disciple, because you know much more than my other guru, so therefore I will be very obliged and very happy to serve you. He said, okay. So then sit down. And he gave him a glass. And then the guru took a lota, water pot, and started pouring into the glass. So then he was seeing, enough. He said, that's okay, it's full. But he started to pour, and it was really full. And he said, no, stop, it's full. But he kept pouring. I said, stop, don't pour anymore. Don't you see that it's overflowing? And he stopped pouring. And he said, yes, this is exactly your case. You are the cup, and you are full of knowledge. There is no more knowledge can fit in. I will not teach you. And he sent me away. So we, because of our pride, we may think that we know everything what that person can give us. But it is very important to understand that the person only gives us as much as we are capable of take. So if we start to see that somebody else talk more sweet, and because of that, he is better than our one, we are aparadis. And it's very serious. Instead of, we should see and find how we can approach our guru, how we can surrender more, so then we understand more what we can do, about how we can draw more understanding, more realization from him, so then we also get the same level of realization. So we have to take a humble position. Then we can elevate ourselves. Yeah?
Prabhu,
also in the process of siksha that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a ceremony that we should do, or can we just come and listen in that siksha?
Well, you can take siksha from anybody. No, it's basically you go around and you can ask anybody just how to do anything, right? Or how do I use the knife, how to cut? So somebody tells you, new bhakta tells you, I use the knife like this, don't use it like this. So in effect, he is also a guru. He gives you some siksha. So anytime, anywhere, you can learn. So then you take siksha. So you don't have to ask permission for all this. But if you are going to accept official Shiksha Guru who is going to instruct you not only in how to perform arts and all material activities, but also in the spiritual. So he should be in line with what your guru is teaching. So the mood, again, should be same. That's important. So then it's custom to ask one's guru that may I take shiksha from the other person, because he may explain the same thing but he has a different angle which very much appeal to me. So this is no way going to affect the relationship between us and our diksha guru, but in fact we want to do so, we deepen our understanding. So that way, then he gives permission, then we can take shiksha from the other guru.
Would be this inquiry to the guru.
So even when we have one diksha guru, we can still have many shiksha gurus. Now, if the diksha guru is no more, so then it's up to our understanding, to see, what is his mood, and then whom to take the shiksha from, so then we follow in the same mood. Yes.
On the point of this siksha teacher,
mm-hmm.
What if we are taking siksha from? It said that the teacher guru should be the prominent siksha guru. But what if the person taking siksha from is not allowed to give initiation, or is not willing to give us initiation? What is our position?
Yeah, we have to. It's a relationship, so the relationship may stay. But we may have to look for somebody else to take a diksha. See, the diksha guru becomes the most prominent shiksha guru. But now, taking it from the other point, the most prominent shiksha guru, because who is giving us the most shiksha, who is giving the most appealing kind of like which we understand the most, so then he becomes the diksha guru. So it goes both ways. But then the shiksha, we may take from any, but we have to maintain the mood. So we have to see that the mood of the acharya is being maintained. Now, if the person, like you say, may not be able to give diksha, so then we have to look for somebody who may give diksha. But that doesn't mean that because he is not capable or doesn't want to, so then we should not sever our relationship with. We should still maintain the relationship on the basis of shiksha. Because ultimately it doesn't really matter that much who the diksha guru becomes. Because even from the diksha, the most important is the shiksha. It's all our relationships, and then this may be our perception, but if you check with the gurus, then many relationships work on that way, that they know that I'm the diksha, but I don't really mind at all that my disciples take shiksha from that person and that person, because I know that all these devotees, they follow very much in line with Srila Prabhupada, therefore I don't mind they take shiksha from those disciples, and it doesn't affect my relationship with the disciples because of that. Yeah? Hare Krishna. Okay.
Bhaktivinoda rejected his guru, but that was different, right? That was, he accepted Jagannath Das Babaji.
Okay, yeah.
And he was already, he had another guru, Vishwas. Was that because of deviation of Vishwas to the principle?
You see, even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, no, he did accept, no, he took sannyas actually from, no, Marwari, no, guru. So, as we said, see, that diksha is not really, no, that important element. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't have to take sannyas, but he wanted the sannyas so then he is, not socially accepted as the sannyasi, so therefore he is the teacher for all. So then he can actually very effectively preach the holy name. If he would go as a grihastha preaching, then it will have less effect. And not because he is less pure, but because of our wanting to take no instruction. We also like the most take instruction from sannyasi, because now he is the most elevated, so we actually not think that, yes, okay, he is the, no, the top. But anybody below, then, no, maybe yes, maybe no, who knows. So many times just based on the name, then we already decide, no, okay, I'm not going to hear, I'm not going. But if it's somebody very well known, then okay, I'll go. So it's our conditioning which we go and we base things on. But if we try to hear from each and every, take the aspects of their own relationships, then we can apply that and we will be very much elevated. See, Srimad Bhagavatam does not talk about sannyasis only, or babajis. No, Prahlad Maharaj, he becomes grihastha. Right. And he is a brahmacharya, he becomes grihastha. Dhruva Maharaj. No, there are, Daksha. No, he is a very engrossed, grihastha. No, most of them are kings, right? So, means, it's all grihasthas. So, that's not the point. The point is that they are devotees. And how did they perform devotional service? Understanding that, we can apply it on ourselves and we can progress. So, as long as we are under the spells, under the influence of dualities, then we are going to suffer. Because we want to do this, we don't want to do this. Right? We want to hear from that one, but not from this one. But maybe this one has also things to say, and maybe he can even say it a way which we may understand better than that one. But just because of duality, then we already refuse. Oh, not this. But this is not the point. The point is that both will preach Krishna consciousness. Both are trying to present what we should do and what we should not do. Now, how we can understand it, and if we can apply it better from this one than that one, then naturally we will rather hear from this person because it's closer to our heart, so we can apply it straight. If we are not very philosophical and somebody talks great philosophy, we may not be able to apply it. We don't know what's going on. But if another person says the same thing, very simple language, so then we understand it. Then we will naturally prefer hearing from the other one. And it's not a fault. Now, there are many saints who translated books. Say like Bhagavad Gita. Gyaneshwar, he translated Bhagavad Gita in Gujarati. And until then, there wasn't a good translation of Bhagavad Gita. So then when he translated, so many of people who could not read Sanskrit, they only could read that simple Gujarati language. So then they started and they became much more devoted, because now they could read about the pastimes of the Lord Krishna. So this is the aspect how we apply it in our devotional service.
So because of Bhaktivinoda, was that the case? He wanted to hear
See, I don't know exactly the aspect why he gave or how he gave up. The fact stays, that he took shiksha from Jagannatha Babaji, and due to that, then he could fully engage himself in devotional service. Okay, if a Vaishnava falls down, what does he have to do? Srila Rupa Goswami also says that if one is regularly discharging devotional service, there will be no question of fall down. But even if circumstantially there is some fall down, the Vaishnava need have nothing to do with the prayaschitta, the ritualistic ceremony for purification. If someone falls down from the principles of devotional service, he need not take to the prayaschitta performances for reformation. He simply has to execute the rules and regulations for discharging devotional service, and this is sufficient for his reinstatement. This is the mystery of the Vaishnava devotional cult. So, also we discussed before that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he describes in Harinam Chintamani that the devotee who may fall down, or devotee who perform some bad, sinful activities previously, so he is not really at fault, and it's a question of time, and generally very short time, when he, by following the devotional service, he purifies himself and he comes to the liberated platform. A person who criticizes, and it may be even like a very elevated devotee, who criticizes such a devotee, the one who falls down, they are at fault. They fall down. They actually fall down. And the result of such fall down is that they lose the taste for devotional service. So the first symptom is that they stop liking to chant the holy name, because there is no taste. No taste for sadhu sangha. And slowly, slowly, then they just withdraw themselves from any activities of devotional service. And that's the fall down. The other devotee, he may have done something, which maybe even now from the point of morality, it may be very bad. But as soon as he understands that it was bad, then he, by chanting and by performing devotional service, immediately gets purified. So there is no need for any prayaschitta or any purificatory processes. Just chant the holy name. And then he gets the taste for the holy name, so he will progress very fast. But the other one who criticizes because of that, then he falls down and he loses the taste.
So I could understand that the real fall down would be stopping the charging of my duties or criticizing my this would be the real
fall down. We, because of our conditioning, we may think that committing some sinful activity or being morally bad something, so then this is the fall down. But actually, it is not a fall down. It is not according to Krishna. We see the duality, so we consider it so. But it doesn't mean anything.
But then criticizing a Vaishnava, that would be a real fall.
Yes. Yes. So, again, seeing a devotee falling down, if we don't know how to relate with it, we may stay away. We may still respect, he was a nice devotee. I may not go to him and ask, no, Prabhupada, please, can you explain me, you know, this verse? No, because I don't have maybe the faith. But still, no, he was a nice devotee, so that much I can respect all the time. And then, no, if I don't have the power or the influence over the devotee, then I'll stay away. But I don't have to go around and, no, and talk about, you know what I heard? Or you know what I saw? It's just gossip. It doesn't help anybody.
It has no pleasing Krishna, right?
Right, yeah. Because he is his dear devotee. And he may not, just due to the influence of Maya, fall down. So what? Each of us are under the influence of Maya. So, no, if we are not very careful, then something may happen to us. So we should rather be helping each other than pointing out our faults and not establishing our superiority over everybody else. That's a fault. That's the fault finding. Because if we can do that, now finding the good qualities on everybody, elevating those qualities, then we will be developing the same qualities. And vice versa. Finding the bad qualities means we were developing the bad ones. If you are in crowd and there may be a thief, another thief spots the thief immediately. You may not know. But the thief finds the thief immediately. Because he knows what thievery is. So he knows how thief moves. So he immediately sees. But ordinary person who is not a thief won't see a thief. So to find a quality on a person, you have to have the quality. You have to have close to the quality. So if you are finding bad qualities, means you have them. In the Shastra only allows that a person who can not point out bad qualities or wrongdoings is the father to a son, parental, or the teacher to a student. That's his, he has to do that. To teach something, he has to point out what you do is wrong. But he does it because he has the influence over the person. There's no way how we can criticize, how we can point out something without even giving the option for how we change, how do you develop, how you fix it. That's criticism. Just to show that you know, that's wrong. But if you really want to be the well-wisher of that person, then you show, okay, I know you did this wrong. But if you do it this way, you will do it right. And we don't have to do it publicly that everybody else come to know. No, the right to information. This is bogus.
Your motive in this case is to please Krishna.
Right. Yeah. So there is a devotee. He fall down. Nobody wants to be with him. Everybody is just disregarding him. So okay, you can come and maybe I can help you if you want something. That's from Buddhist story. Then there was one disciple, very good student. Now he was in Gurukul, and then he had very close relationship with his teacher, and also to his wife. So then they were discussing topics and not so many, but the other students very very jealous of him. So then they did not like that he was the favorite of the teacher. So once the teacher, he left somewhere and he was discussing with his wife, because he was like at home. So it was his mother. But then the students actually, they poisoned the mind of the teacher. So then they said, look, no, your favorite, but he's actually chatting with your wife and you are not there. So then when he comes back and he actually saw that, yes, they were, in very jolly mood, basically discussing. So he thought something is wrong. So he chased him away. And because he was chased away, then no other guru would take him. So he was rejected from the society. He was outcast. And then he tried so many things, but even his father wouldn't accept him. He's an outcast. So then he took revenge on the society. And he started to kill. He was a dacoit. So he was killing people. And for each killed one, then he would cut a small finger. And he makes it like a garland of them. So he was called Angulimala. So and then, once Buddha was passing by and he was going to kill Buddha. But he could not catch him. He could not, he was always behind him. So then he understood that he's somebody different. So then he immediately surrendered to him and Buddha took him now into as his disciple. And then, so he became monk. Now the king came to know. The police, the soldiers, they came and they saw he is a monk. Now he is purified. So we will not touch him. They were looking for him. They could not catch him. Now for years. And they were really going to kill him. But they saw, okay, now he is purified. They won't touch him. So he was going for begging to the villages. So some villages, they recognized him and they beat him up. And in fact, he was dying. But at the time also, Buddha comes. And then, he was saying, well, even though I am dying, but still I'm happy. Because, I have understood my spiritual, identity, whatever. But, he left, feeling happy that he actually, achieved Brahmavutta platform. But the point is here that it's the identity. It's what actually we are doing, what we have to do. So then if we identify ourselves as a devotees, we should perform devotional service. And then if somebody does perform devotional service, even though we may not be able to observe it all the time, or something happens, we should not criticize the person. Criticism is very bad, and it makes one atheistic.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama.